Chico Smoke Shop. Save up to 40% on all products with no city or state sales tax. Over 100 brands, including a walk-in humidor. Visit Chico's inside or take advantage of the drive-thru. Open 7 days a week. You'll save up to 40% every day at Chico Smoke Shop.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
What's going on? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast Podcast. As always, I'm Justin Spears. My guy sitting across the way, my co-host, Dominic Pacheco. Dominic, first impressions of Arizona's Pac-12 opening weekend. Go.
It's tough to sum up.
You just put it right there.
It's tough to sum up. I mean, good. I mean, they walked out with two wins. I mean, that's the thing for Arizona this year is if they can win games, it doesn't really matter how it happens. It's not going to be pretty because the Pac-12 isn't that this year. So if they can walk out with a sweep, whether it's on the road, whether it's at home, road sweeps look really good.
Yeah.
But if you beat two teams, Utah, especially a quality team, whenever we say quality or good team in the Pac-12 this year, just know that we're putting air quotes around it because Utah is not a quality team. But in the Pac-12, it's a good win for Arizona.
Yeah.
And they had to grind it out. It was probably one of the few games that they could have lost at home this year, you know, along with ASU and the Givens. UCLA and Oregon both come here this year.
Mm-hmm.
So,
like, UCLA, USC, it's just in LA.
Right. But so look, it's a big win for them. Sean Miller's success against the Rocky Mountain School. So it's just keep the train rolling. They're 2-0.
Yeah.
Got a tied their season long win streak at 4. And now you get to go on the road for your first real Pac-12 test of the season, at least.
Mm-hmm. Real quick. We got to let the people know.
There's a lot going on.
That Caitlin Schmidt is actually going to be on our podcast. The one and only, the legend herself, Caitlin Schmidt, is going to join the pod later on to talk about Book Richardson and his plea agreement. That's the talk of the town, at least for Arizona basketball right now, was his plea agreement. Book took a plea agreement, which was he pled guilty to federal funds bribery, which was initially reported on Monday. And now, rather than facing 60 years in prison, Book Richardson could possibly face 18 to 24 months, which is still jail time, but it's not 60 years.
Right. No, yeah, 18 to 24, and they think it's going to be on the low side of that. So,
But we'll talk to Caitlin about all of that.
Absolutely.
But Dom, I mean, Arizona this past weekend, I thought they looked good. I thought against, oh my gosh, why am I blanking? Colorado. They looked like they, I almost said Cal, but
almost.
They had a stretch where they played their best basketball I've ever seen them play this year. And then it got to right around the 9-minute mark, and Colorado started inching back. They started knocking down a few three-pointers, and then they really pulled themselves back into the game. It got uncomfortable for Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a game where Justin Coleman came off the bench for the Cats because of his shoulder injury. And then he was installed into the starting lineup against Utah on Saturday, which is a noon tip-off. And Arizona, once again, they look solid at some points, but then there have been other points where they look like a team that could finish in the middle of the Pac-12. And that's my biggest concern for Arizona moving forward is they look great sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes down to tournament time, you can't look great sometimes. You got to play solid all the time, every minute of the game. And that's my biggest concern with the team is, yeah, you can play in these kind of games at home and rely on your home crowd to kind of get behind you and give you some kind of motivation. But then what's going to happen when you're on the road?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to use your talent. Sean Miller's going to actually have to coach these guys in order for this team to be successful.
Absolutely. I think that's why, in part, maybe if it was a different road trip, you could say this to an even further extent. But I think this will be a good test for them. It'll kind of give us a gauge on, you know, right now I would say Arizona is hands down the favorite to win the Pac-12, even over Arizona State. Which is crazy. And again, that's not a testament to how good Arizona is. It's a testament to how bad the Pac-12 is. But right now, I think that's where Arizona is. I think they're the favorite in the Pac-12. And I think this road trip is going to kind of, look, if they go lose a game to Cal or Stanford, then maybe you kind of come back on that statement and go, maybe not. Maybe ASU is the favorite. It's just, it's going to be so back and forth. There's not going to be one dominating force in the Pac-12 this year. But I think if there is one, it's going to be Arizona, if not just because the rest of the conference is so bad. And if Arizona plays pretty good basketball, like you said, on most nights, they're going to win in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
I liked, you talk about how they played against Colorado, some stretches that they had against the Buffs. I really liked how they played against Utah. I know it was a close game, went to overtime. Yeah. Shouldn't happen necessarily, Mikhail, but it's Pac-12. If you win in overtime, if that's what it takes, and that's what it takes. But look, they took care of the ball relatively well. What I was really impressed with was how they distributed the ball.
Yeah.
They got down low. They didn't necessarily drive all the time. They would kick it out. They'd find the open man. They'd go they'd dish the extra pass. And I think that's kind of an identity this team can build around. They have guys like Justin Coleman who can come out and dish 5-6 assists a night. And if they're hot or if they find the lanes inside, it's going to benefit them. So I think instead of being this 3-point shooting team that they've tried to be and that doesn't really work with a bunch of guys who are hot, so hot and cold, like Brandon Randolph, like Dylan Smith, like Brandon Williams, I think if you can utilize those guys in an aspect where they're all dishing the ball and trying to find the open man and the best shot, I think that's something that suits this team really well. And if they do it as well as they did against, as effectively as they did against Utah, I think they're going to have a lot of success down the stretch.
Absolutely. And ball movement is key.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about 3-point shooting and ball movement. Talk about your boys, the Golden State Warriors. Yeah, they shoot the three ball very well, but what's something that they do just as impressive?
They always dish more pass.
They're constantly moving the ball, trying to find the open guy. One extra pass. It's always one more. With this Arizona team, they're not talented enough to be in ISO situations where you can have Alonzo Trier going to work on the wing, or you could just feed it down to DeAndre Ayton and let him do whatever he does. This is a team that's got to rely on guys cutting back door, constant ball movement, guys just constantly flowing in the offense rather than just stopping and staring and watching whoever has the ball do something.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to get into more of the player aspect of it all. You know, Sean Miller, I think for this year's team alone, I thought he's done a pretty decent job at coaching these guys because he actually has to really coach them now. But in terms of players, it's not what I expected it to be. I still don't know what Devonair Dutrieve's role is.
Does anyone?
Yeah,
Sean Miller doesn't know. Sean Miller doesn't know.
But the starting rotation, the starting lineup right now has been Justin Coleman, Brandon Williams, Brandon Randolph, Emmanuel Acott, and Chase Jeter. I always thought Ryan Luther was going to be the guy that started because he is this stretch forward. I thought he was going to be more of like a Kevin Love mm-hmm. kind of player where he's a stretch forward who's really good at rebounding, but he can also shoot the three ball well. And he knocked down a few three-pointers in that second half against Utah, which really helped out Arizona. I don't know what his role is other than just coming off the bench for Emmanuel Acott. And I don't think we'll see Ryan Luther in the starting lineup if Arizona continues to win like this.
And I know Sean Miller had a lot of good things to say about Ryan Luther in the press conference this week. And when they brought him in, I think he was a big part, if not a centerpiece with Chase Jeter on what they were going and Brandon Williams on what they were going to try to accomplish this year. I think Ryan Luther was going to be a big part of it. And now you look at him, you know, a couple months into the season, he lost a job to Emmanuel Acott. And maybe losing the job isn't the way to put it because Emmanuel Acott's in there for other reasons, defensively specifically, but Emmanuel Acott shooting 38.6%.
Yeah.
On offense, he's only playing 19 minutes a game. He's only grabbing fewer than 3 rebounds a game.
And what about his assists? You're looking at stats right now.
Yeah, he's non-factor in assists, less than 1 a game. just about as many turnovers a game. So he's not really 42% from the charity stripe. Emmanuel Aycott doesn't bring a ton to the table except on the defensive end. I won't deny that he's one of Arizona's best defenders.
Yeah.
And Sean Miller obviously views him in that light. It's why he's starting for them. But when you look at Ryan Luther, if you can't do enough to start over Emmanuel Aycott, and again, I'm not trying to look down on Emmanuel Aycott. I think what he brings to the team is vital in the form of defense. But I've thought Ryan Luther's been pretty underwhelming this year, in the sense that when he came in, and maybe that's just because of our expectations for him at the beginning of the year of what we thought he was going to be, but where he is now is definitely not where, at least where I thought he'd be going into Pac-12 play.
Well, I think you and I can both agree that we thought Arizona was in complete panic mode when they picked him up.
Mm-hmm.
So we automatically assumed that almost every other possession is going to go
through Ryan Luther.
Through Ryan Luther, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than a Chase Jeter or a Brandon Randolph, because if I'm not mistaken, when they picked up Ryan Luther, was Brandon Williams still uncommitted to Arizona?
I couldn't say
like
for
he decommitted.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know off the top of my head, but I think when Arizona officially signed him, we all thought, okay, this is a guy that averaged the double-double at Pitt before he went down with his foot injury.
Mm-hmm.
He's back healthy 100%. This is going to be a guy that Arizona and Sean Miller relies on heavily, not just almost every other possession, but late in games. He's a veteran who's got experience. He's played against some of the best talent in college basketball, playing in the ACC for the last 3 years. I mean, he's a player that we all thought was going to have a significant role with Arizona, and him coming out to the Pac-12 meant, okay, now we're going to see the ACC talents of the world. We're going to see them thrive out west. And we haven't seen that with Ryan Luther. And maybe the Pac-12 play and him getting into a routine with the team and understanding what his role is, maybe now he's going to start to settle in. And we kind of saw that in the second half against Utah. I think maybe we're going to start to see that get ramped up a little bit more.
Well, and he hit a couple big shots against Utah, and maybe that's his role. I mean, if him and Aycott kind of do that kind of 1-2 punch where Aycott starts and Ryan Luther comes in at the first time out, and, you know, if that's what they got to do, then great, but it's got to work.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I don't see much production out of Aycott right now, except on the defensive side, which, you know, when Utah has as much success as they did with Cedric Bearfield just absolutely torching them, where is Emmanuel Aycott's contribution? But if he can step it up on defense and Ryan Luther can come in and kind of hit those important shots, be a guy that they can run the offense through, I see as beneficial. Speaking of people who they run the offense through, Chase Jeter is if Ryan Luther can be what Chase Jeter is to this team right now, that's huge. If they have those two big guys down inside. But right now, Chase Jeter, in my mind, is really kind of, I don't want to say carrying this team, because they have so much production from so many and so many contributions from so many different players. But I think Chase Jeter's as good as it gets for Arizona right now. I mean, he's shooting 65%. Obviously, that's all from inside. He leads the team in field goal percentage. He leads them in rebounding. He tied a career high in points, had a career high in rebounds, career high in assists in the game against Utah. So look, what he's brought to this Arizona team is, I mean, you don't have to talk much about it. And I think if Ryan Luther can be half of that, if he can be someone that they can run the offense through down low, that's huge.
Mm-hmm. They're going to need Ryan Luther in Pac-12 play.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you that, because they need to win as many games as possible, because the Pac-12 is maybe a two-team bid to get in the NCAA tournament.
Maybe two. I saw a bracket today. I don't remember who it was from. It wasn't ESPN Bracketology, but it was one of the brackets that had Arizona and ASU. And again, not talking about brackets in January, but it's a possibility that they get two teams in. It would be tough. ASU and Arizona would pretty much have to run the show in the Pac-12, which I think they will.
Yeah.
But again, your mindset right now in the Pac-12 is you have to win to get in.
And the Pac-12. Every game matters. And now that Arizona heads into this weekend against the Bay Area schools, which I think they will sweep, something tells me they're going to take care of Stanford. That's their biggest challenge this weekend, is Stanford. If they can get through Stanford on Wednesday and Cal on Saturday, that's going to be huge, because the LA schools, both UCLA and USC, they got to go on the road and take on the Oregon schools. Now, Arizona right now is 2-0. The only other 2-0 teams in conference play are the LA schools. They're on the road against the Oregon schools. Oregon, not what we expected them to be, especially without Bol Bol.
Yeah, without Bol Bol, it's really injuries. I mean, Oregon was probably one of the top four favorites to win the conference a couple weeks ago before Bol Bol exited. But yeah, I mean, you talk about what this week means for Arizona. If they go out and beat Stanford, who, by the way, they haven't lost to since 2009. If they go out and beat Stanford, it's a huge step forward. It's a lot of confidence going into a Cal. Going into the game against Cal, who's given them a little bit of trouble in years past. You remember they came into McHale Center, beat them in Berkeley when I believe Arizona was number one at the time. Yeah. And they played some good games. Cal's obviously not what they have been. They're, you know, if you think Arizona's at rock bottom, Cal is definitely at rock bottom. But look, Arizona, they got a big week for him. It's the first Pac-12 road trip. They've played some tough road games this year. I think probably two tougher road games than they'll face in the Pac-12, maybe with the exception of Oregon and ASU. But it's a big week for him just because it's a road trip. And anytime he can go sweep a road trip, it's big in the Pac-12. I think a lot of coaches will tell you if you split, that's a big deal. I think the goal going on the road is to split. But if Arizona walks away with two wins, like you said, they should. I think it's huge for him moving forward. And you just putting your best foot forward at the beginning of conference play when the Pac-12 is not that strong. If you start out 4-0 coming back home, chance to go 6-0, I think that's huge. Mm-hmm.
Especially you look at what's ahead.
Mm-hmm.
They got to play the Oregon schools at home, and then they got to go on the road and face USC and UCLA, followed by a trip to Tempe to end the month of January. So those three road games right there, those are losable games for Arizona. So if they can somehow go into next week's matchup against Oregon with a 4-0 conference record, I think they're in a good spot.
Yeah, I mean, pile up as many wins as you can against the worst of the worst in the Pac-12. Exactly.
Because
I mean, that's the thing. It's, this whole conference can be a shootout. They're going to beat up on each other, not in a good way. It's going to be ugly, like we started off the podcast saying. Exactly. Like we started off the podcast saying, if an ugly win is a good win this year in the Pac-12, because that's just how they're going to be. It's not going to look good. Arizona's not going to dominate anyone this year, maybe with the exception of Cal. But it's that time of year where they need to compile as many wins as they can, obviously, because they want a first round bye in the Pac-12 tournament, and they need to win the Pac-12.
Bowl predictions for this weekend. You're a Bay Area guy.
Mm-hmm.
Arizona's going up to the Bay Area. What's your bowl prediction for this week? If you had to look ahead to what is going to happen this weekend, what are you going to pick? I'm going to go ahead and get things started.
Okay.
I think for some reason, something tells me that Brandon Randolph is going to explode against Stanford.
Mm.
I think Brandon Randolph is going to set a career high. He's going to score, let's call it 32 points. Brandon Randolph scores 32 points against the Cardinal, and Arizona's going to need every 32 of Brandon Randolph's points because I think it's going to be a close game against the Cardinal in Palo Alto. But Brandon Randolph offensively will go off. He will have a great performance. He'll follow up with a 20, 22, 24 point performance against California. Brandon Randolph is your Pac-12 player of the week heading into next week.
Ooh. Oh, well, you're taking out the big guns for your bold prediction here. Well, now I got to step up my game. You like Brandon Randolph over Brandon Williams, huh?
Yeah, I got to give it to the veteran, even though he's a sophomore.
Interesting. I kind of like Brandon Williams to step up. It won't be my bold prediction, but I do think Brandon Williams is going to have a good week.
Yeah.
Bold prediction, I'll go back to Chase Jeter here. I think he'll break his career bests in rebounds and in points, which are 21 and 13.
Okay.
I think he'll break both of those.
You could have like a 24 and 14.
Maybe not in the same game. Maybe not in the same game. Probably against Cal, if I had to pick. Look, Stanford's not as strong as they have been in years past, too, without Reed Travis.
Mm-hmm.
So he could do it against them.
That's a good point.
But I like Chase Jeter.
I like
him. Keep things rolling. Off one of his best games of his career against Utah and a big win over Utah. I think he keeps it rolling.
I like that one a lot. That's actually more likely to happen than my Brandon Randolph.
The 13 rebounds will be tough to top, but I'll go with it. Well, no, the Brandon Randolph player of the week, it's you know, if he can heat up, that's the thing with any Arizona's players, if they heat up, they're all good enough to go explode, you know? If he goes and makes 5 3-pointers in a game, he can get it.
Let's get Caitlin Schmidt on the phone. Talk some Book Richardson, shall we?
That time of year.
And here joining the Wildcast podcast is a legend herself from the Arizona Daily Star, Caitlin Schmidt. Caitlin, thank you so much for joining the pod.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Always. Caitlin, so the one of the headlines that everybody's talking about in town today is the Book Richardson headline, the former Arizona coach. He took a plea agreement to federal funds bribery, and he took the plea agreement, which was initially reported on Monday. For you, and you follow these stories, and you've been on top of this ever since it happened last September. What did you make about the Book Richardson's plea agreement, and did it surprise you at all?
No, I mean, these cases usually don't go to trial. The defendant really has nothing to benefit. It's just costly, and, you know, the government doesn't actually want to do that. They want to close these out. It's costly for both sides. Book was facing a lengthy sentence, wasn't it? 60 years in prison, a $1.5 million fine if he was convicted on all charges. So we really all thought the plea would come out, especially after Tony Bland took his plea a few weeks ago.
How is Book Richardson's plea deal different than Tony Bland's, if we know enough about Bland's to say?
You know, from what I've read, Bland allegedly accepted less money during these incidents, so he may only receive probation, but it seems like they pleaded guilty to similar charges. The statutory range for Book's plea was 18 to 24 months in prison, but it obviously could be less, and I'm not sure if it's probation eligible, but most of these white-collar crimes are.
And you say Book is 18 to 24 months, down from 60 if, you know, he was convicted through trial. What are the
years.
Yeah, 60 years, years. Not months, 60 years, down to 18 to 24 months. What are the odds that he gets between 18 and 24 months? Is there any chance he gets fewer than that?
Yeah, I think we'll see less. It's tough to say. It really does all depend on the judge. And I think once we see Tony Bland's sentencing, we'll have a better scope of this. But in the few federal cases that I've covered, when I expected to see prison time, these defendants in similar white-collar crimes involving federal funds misappropriation receive probation.
Mm-hmm. But when you talk about, you know, similar white-collar crimes, I don't think there's really anything similar to what's going on in college basketball. What's something that you can relate to that you've had experiences with?
The most recent case that I covered involved a former Pima County, Chief Deputy Christopher Radke, who was charged with, I think, 7 or 8 federal crimes related to misappropriation of federal funds. The Sheriff's Department was using these RICO funds that were seized from people accused of crimes, and they were supposed to be using these funds for crime-fighting activities, but instead were buying model airplanes and spending it on Christmas pageants and that sort of thing. We saw in the indictment that this one gentleman was accused of up to $500,000 in federal funds misappropriations, but he ended up pleading guilty to, it was one felony out of 8, and he had 1 year of probation and no jail time. Community service, there was a little bit of a fine, and he signed a contract agreeing not to work in county government or law enforcement in Pima County again. So,
Now with this plea agreement, I think this is an interesting part of the story. Is when I think of plea agreement, I automatically think, oh well, he's just gonna, you know, plead guilty, and then he's gonna cooperate with the FBI and pretty much, as we say, it's snitch on everybody. And this isn't the case. Book Richardson said he's not planning on cooperating with federal authorities. Is that common for somebody who has a plea agreement, Caitlin?
You know, I haven't seen that kind of language before. My understanding with the last case that I covered involving the Sheriff's Department was that the number one suspect in the case was deceased. So there were no additional charges to be filed, but there was no language in his plea agreement that indicated that he would be bound to testify in any upcoming trials. So it's tough to say. It depends on what kind of deal the government wants to make, I guess. My understanding is that even with plea agreements, they could be called to testify in additional cases, but they aren't necessarily bound by the terms of the plea.
Okay.
So it seems like a good situation for Book Richardson. Go down from 60 years, take a plea deal, face 18 to 24 months and whatever fine he has. What is the benefit here on the flip side of it?
I mean, they don't have to take this case to trial. Perhaps he gave them information against other suspects that didn't plead guilty. It's a win for the government, honestly.
But that's what I'm saying. If he doesn't have to necessarily cooperate, if that's not part of the plea agreement, then is it just a win for the government in the sense that it doesn't have to go to trial?
They have some people admitting to guilt. So, you know what I mean? It's not going to go to trial and result in an acquittal. So it's the same thing that we see in criminal cases, unfortunately, where somebody could be charged with, let's say, first-degree murder in some kind of case, and it'll get pleaded down to a lesser case, maybe second-degree murder or manslaughter. And a good portion of it has to do with the cost or what it would take out of the victims. But it also, these cases are so lengthy. To take a case to trial takes years, especially in a situation like this. I'm really surprised that the first one made its trial so quickly, but it's just an exponential cost to the government. They have other cases to prosecute. A win is a win. Juries are notoriously unpredictable. Look at some of the criminal cases we've seen. You just never know what's going to happen. People can be having a good day and make up that mind. So, I think really the government never wants to have to rely on human behavior as a deciding factor in a case that they know that they have a win on.
So with the plea agreement, obviously legally, Book Richardson is guilty of bribery. From a, I don't want to say logistical standpoint, but is this something where you look at the sentence and you look at the most recent fallout and outcome of the most recent college basketball trial? Is this something that Book Richardson could have possibly pleaded guilty on, took the plea deal to avoid going to trial, to avoid facing up to 60 years in prison? Or, what are the other options for him here as far as the benefit in taking the plea agreement?
Oh, absolutely. If you're a defendant, it's the same situation. You never want to have to rely on a jury. If they're offering him an 18-month to 2-year prison term and he's facing up to 60, and we haven't even heard what the fines could be in this case, yeah. If he was convicted on all counts, which is, of course, unlikely, he was facing up to $1.5 million, which I'm sure he doesn't have. He's been unemployed for years. So this is really just kind of a win-win for everybody. I'm sure that the expense, the government can afford to take these cases to trial. It's much more costly for a defendant who is paying for a private attorney that can, hundreds of dollars an hour, hundreds to thousands of dollars an hour, depending on the quality of lawyer you have. And it looks like he has top-notch attorneys. So if they're offering you a way out, I would think most defendants would take it.
Looking ahead in the college basketball trial that was set for April with Bland and Book Richardson, having them both reach plea deals in their cases, what's next on the horizon from a legal standpoint in this investigation?
I think we're looking at some sentencing hearings ahead. Christian Dawkins, I believe, is still the defendant in this same case. There's still some loose ends to tie up, but this kind of marks a majority in defendants that have taken pleas.
Caitlin Schmidt, always providing the best analysis. You can follow her on Twitter at Caitlin C. Schmidt. You can catch all of her content on Tucson.com. And, if there's anything, legal stuff going around the University of Arizona, you can catch her on the Wildcaster app. Caitlin, thank you so much for joining the podcast. Always appreciate having you.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
That was Caitlin Schmidt dishing the goods on Book Richardson's plea agreement that he reached on Monday. Justin, just really quick before we sign off here, this college basketball scandal is far from over, but it is, at the very least, it seems that Book Richardson, and Caitlin kind of said it, it's a it's a win-win for everybody. There's still some loose ends to be tied up, but it's a huge step forward in the investigation and the trial process. We are taking steps forward.
Yes, forward.
but there's a long way to go.
Well, I think this is, you know, Book Richardson and Tony Bland, and I'm sure the other assistant coaches implicated in this trial or in this investigation, I think they're probably going to say, well, the FBI actually has evidence of us discussing payments for these recruits and giving out payments for these recruits. I think what they're trying to do is let's cut all the BS. Let's move forward. Let's own up to what we actually did and let's just move on with our lives. Because if you're looking at Book Richardson, what he's been just sitting around his house for 15 months now that was since September 2017.
Essentially, you would
ever
think,
since he was fired from Arizona, he's been unemployed. He hasn't received any money from the University of Arizona. So he's literally just living on his money that he has saved up and also other checks coming in from former players that played at Arizona. So I think what he's just trying to do, he's like, listen, I put my family through all of this BS. I'm just trying to move on with my life. As all these other guys are, let's just move forward and progress.
Well, and yeah, you said it. I mean, he's been sitting here for 15 months now unemployed, and it probably is kind of a restraint on getting employed by others in the same, I mean, whether it's the NBA or college or wherever he's trying to go, it's not easy to say, hire me. I'm going to go on trial in a federal trial in New York next year, but hire me.
Yeah.
He was at a NBA, I don't know if it was a scouting event or some
draft
kind of
combine.
Was it the actual draft combine? He was there. I mean, networking is what the reports were.
Yeah.
So, who knows what is in store for Book Richardson's future, but a date for sentencing, should be coming here soon, and it's believed to be set in April. So we'll find out, legally what comes for him sooner than later.
So we're just kind of in wait and see mode right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that will do it for this episode of the Wildcast podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the pod on Apple Podcasts. Make sure you like the Wildcaster on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. And you definitely need to download the Wildcaster app, available on the App Store and Google Play. That'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast podcast. For Dom, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
Chico's Smoke Shop. Save up to 40% on all products with no city or state sales tax. Over 100 brands, including a walk-in humidor. Visit Chico's inside or take advantage of the drive-thru. Open 7 days a week. You'll save up to 40% every day at Chico's Smoke Shop.